If you would, turn in your Bibles to the book of Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 4. Big picture of Ephesians. It's all about the church. And if preachers did more preaching from the Word, then some of this would be better known by God's people. But a church is not a physical building. It's a living organism. That's honestly, in today's thinking of churches, those precious people that were assaulted last Sunday, you can tear down the building, but what got assaulted was the living organism of the people. That's what the church is. It's a living organism. By the way, the church is not just us. The church is everywhere where Jesus' true disciples are. Now, it's interesting what has happened to the church. We divide up over different things now. But really, there is only one universal living organism of all God's people. And when we get to glory in the millennial kingdom or in heaven, there won't be different sides or neighborhoods for God's people. If you're truly born again, you can be Methodist, Presbyterian, whatever. And that living organism, really, that's on this side of these distinctions. We'll find out in heaven which emphases were right. Although the Bible does give us some indications of some things. But nonetheless, there won't be different neighborhoods. There are here. By the way, just to take a survey, what background are from you all from? How many are from a Methodist background? How many of you are from Presbyterians? You know, you got to remember that Ralph was a Methodist, Alan Presbyterian. How many of you, what other background are you from? Baptist? Catholic? They're the Egyptian church? There won't be any of this.
UCCP.
What's that?
United Church of Christ Kingdom.
Okay. Isn't it funny how we all divide up, but we're all one body in Jesus. And when we get to glory, all of this will disappear. But the point we want to make is Ephesians 1 through 3 was about the living organism of God's people. And you now know how you can damage the church. What if an earthquake occurred right now and that speaker that Mr. White put up there fell down? Would that damage the church? Not even if it hit the preacher. Because the church is not a building. That's why I tell you and keep repeating, how we treat one another is what damages. It's a living organism. Next, we found out that in this living organism, God is given people to help God's church become more Christ-like. And what we have in this church, pastor, elder, overseer, what they're to honestly do is exemplify Jesus to you. So grade Pastor Dave and all the elders on whether they exemplify Jesus as the elders of this church. Because that's where the elders are to exemplify Jesus, so you see Jesus through them. Then, we're now in the section of Paul wants to tell us about, not only is the church a living organism, but you need to dress properly to come to church. But it's not what you think. For many years, churches had outside dress codes. I remember this. I come from, on my mom's side, the strict background. If you come to church, you wear certain outside things. You dress a certain way. But this is not what the Bible teaches about the church being a living organism. As a matter of fact, Jesus taught, and I'm going to show you this morning, that it's not the outside of a person that matters. Beyond modesty in dress, God doesn't care. Frankly, come to this church on the outside any way you want. If you like to wear a tie, it's fine. If you like to wear a suit, if you want to be, and I wore jeans today deliberately, because we're going to show you what the Bible teaches. It used to be no shirt, no shoes, no service at many churches. Now, what happens when you place an emphasis on the outside of a person, no one pays attention to what's on the inside. Isn't it more difficult to know what's on the inside of a person? Now, we took you last week, and I told you that one time at a church, or 2 weeks ago, that there was a man that got up and said we shouldn't be accepting into our church membership anybody with tattoos. And he quoted the old covenant, Leviticus 19:25. Not to mark, but that's the old covenant. And the reason why was people would mark themselves with tattoos of false gods. Well, that was the old covenant. God doesn't care about tattoos if you come dressed with a tattoo. If I would dare say, if I ask people to raise their hands, which one of us would say they are tattoo free? Anybody? Oh, really? Huh? But you see, if we emphasize, you know what they're doing now? You want to get really weirded out? I saw this preparing for this sermon. They are tattooing people's eyeballs. They are taking a needle and literally, with a tattoo needle, darkening the white, making it red so when people open their eyes, you can't see the iris color. It's all dark. Or they make them completely red. How do you like that? That to me would be excruciating, painful, but they're doing it. Can you imagine sitting in the tattoo parlor? You'd risk eye infection, everything. Listen to me though. Honestly, beside the fact that it's probably not very healthy for your vision, God doesn't want us to stumble over that. They're also having people that are literally cutting their tongue in two. Have you seen it? They take and they, I've seen them do it where they cut and then it's like a forked serpent tongue. Yes. But I know, as strange as that may sound to you, the Bible never says the outside is what matters. The reason why we judge people quickly on the outside is that's sure easy to do, isn't it? If somebody dresses a little unusual, we immediately start to make some decisions about people that we shouldn't. Let me show you what Jesus taught. I want you to hold your finger there, and I want you to go to Mark. Jesus did a lot of teaching about dress, but it was never what was on the outside. And Paul is just going to continue this teaching of Jesus. Mark 7, verse 14. Jesus called all the people that were following him together because he wanted to teach them how to dress. But it's not the way you've grown up in many cultures of Christianity, what Jesus taught. He calls the multitudes in verse 14 and he gives them something very important. He says this, "Listen to me. All of you understand." And when Jesus thought something was important, this is how he did it. "There is nothing outside the man which can defile him." That means this. There's nothing on the outside that can defile you. A tattoo, even doing your eyeballs. I don't encourage it, but it's not the outside. Now, I know we do a lot of judging of the outside, don't we? He said, not the outside, but the things which come out, the inside, that defile. And when Jesus said that, he was teaching his people to make careful spiritual decisions that it's not the outside. Now look what Jesus did in Matthew. Hold there and go. Let's go to Matthew, where Jesus excoriated a very predominant religious group, and that was the Pharisees. Now the Pharisees were literally called the pious separated ones. And you could tell a Pharisee from everybody else based on this one thing. Are you ready? The externals. You could tell a Pharisee. Look what Jesus told the Pharisees. In verse Matthew 23:25. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside they are full of robbery and self-indulgence." What mattered to Jesus was not the outside that looked good, but the inside coming out that defiles. Look what he said next. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." Now, what is a hypocrite? By the way, did you think Jesus' preaching was very soft? He called them the predominant religious group of his day that practiced their religion outwardly, continually, on the outside, constantly. He called them hypocrites. Does anybody know what a hypocrite is? On the outside, you pretend to be something that you aren't on the inside. And we get our... Guess what? Do you know what word comes from... That word comes from actor. This afternoon at 2 o'clock, Sandy and I are going to Sarah's debut at the college. She's acting. They will all pretend to be something that they are not. And this is where the word hypocrite, wearing a mask on the outside. For the mask conceals what the person truly is. And so this is where the word hypocrite from. He says, "Woe unto you, Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs." Every year the Jews would take whitewash, go to their graveyards and paint everything. Make it look real good. Paint the tombs. Decorate, make the place look good. But then Jesus said something in this comparison. "You are like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside they are filled with dead men's bones and all uncleanness." That's why the Jews would paint on the outside, and when they buried a body, They would put spices with it, strong spices, because the body would what? By the way, there's a new way they're going to be burying people. No longer will it be cremation. They're going to liquefy bodies. Have you heard about this? This is the cutting edge. They will be putting people into a system where it literally dissolves the body, liquefies it, and that's it. The body is dissolved into fluid and gone. Huh? The body is just a shell. But what I'm telling you is, the analogy of Jesus is saying, you look good on the outside, but your inside, here, you ready? Stinks. Now that's why they killed him. Because he told them that everybody thinks you're so wonderfully religious, you dress nice on the outside, but you stink on the inside. And look what he said. Even so, verse 28, you appear outwardly righteous, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. And Jesus really told them to clean your inside. In this address, clean your insight, and that's what the Bible says is so important on dressing. So, two things we have. The church is a living organism, it's alive, it's not a building. And two, God cares about how you dress. Jesus said, though, it's not what we look like on the outside. And yet, many people, when they come to church, give more attention to what they're going to wear on the outside than how they are spiritually on the inside. Now, let's take a look at Ephesians as we go through this, going back to Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 4, and I want to point out, in Ephesians chapter 4, two words that are the prime wording that Paul uses. When you get into a translation, these words disappear. But when you are in the original, you can see, and here are the two words that Paul wants you to remember. Verse 22 of chapter 4, 4:22, he says that in reference to your former manner of life, that's your conduct, lay aside. How many have the New American Standard again? Lay aside. Who has the New King James? What's it say? Put off. Anybody else have another translation? Put away. This is a clothing term. They would use this term for someone who would literally take your coat off. Paul is saying, when you come to church, don't wear this. Put it aside. It's a clothing term. He doesn't care if you come with tennis shoes, dress, suit and tie. He's not concerned with that. He wants you to put aside, and then he's going to go into it. We're going to go into it. Then the next term that we want you to know is in verse 22. And it says, and put on. The New American says, put on. What else do you have? Huh? You have take off, put off, and put on. What do you have for verse 24, put on? Huh? No. Put on. What's the term there? Does it say put on, or what does it say? Anybody else? Now, that doesn't mean what you think of putting on. Have you ever said that man's just putting on? That's not what it means. These are two clothing terms. Take it off. Put it on. He's not talking about ties and suits. Those are the two main terms that Paul is dealing with here. They're used in clothing. Take it off, put it on. So what do we take off? So let's go back to verse 17 where Paul starts this, and we'll put in the two main verbs in 22 and 24. This I say therefore and affirm together with the Lord that you what? That you walk. Now listen, what does Paul immediately start talking about in chapter 4 after he talks about the officers of the church? He starts talking about walk. Walk. That you walk. Okay, I'm pigeon-toed. I always have been, always will be. They used to make fun of me as a kid, and when I was little, my parents put these braces on my legs, and everybody thought I had polio when I didn't. Embarrassing. They felt they could make the feet walk this way. Why do I bring that up? Paul's not talking about whether you're pigeon-toed or whether you walk like this. He's talking about conduct. Now, where did the idea of walk become conduct? Look what it says. That you, with the Lord, that you walk no longer as the Gentiles walk. So, have you ever had that song, Walk Like an Egyptian? You ever remember that song? He's not talking about physical walk. Where did this come from? Well, let's go back and find out where walk came from in the Bible, because the word doesn't mean literally walk. It's used in the Bible frequently to refer not to stepping one foot in front of the other, but your conduct. Let's go to Genesis 5, where walk starts. Hold your finger there, and we go back to Genesis chapter 5. Way back to Genesis chapter 5. It's about our great-grandparents. By the way, I don't care if you're Filipino, Hispanic, Egyptian, and after 23andMe, I have no idea what I am. We all go back to these great-grandparents. This is who we go back to. And it talks about they lived a long time. And it talks about a man named Enoch in 5:21. And it says, Enoch lived 65 years and became the father of Methuselah. Now guys, that just shows you that they didn't become fathers early, did they? 65 before they became fathers, and that's why anybody that's below 65 cannot be called grandfather. Let's be biblical about it. Anybody below 65 is referred to as father. And you'll figure that one out after a while. Then Enoch, look at this. Verse 22, Enoch what? Walked with God. There is where Paul is grabbing his term walk from. Enoch walked with God. It doesn't mean that he literally, come on, Lord, hold my hand, although that could happen, let's walk. It meant he lived a life in actions pleasing to God. How's your walk with God? If I said to you this morning, how's your walk with God? You'd know immediately what I meant, wouldn't you? That's what this term means. That's where it comes from. But look at this. And after he became the father of Methuselah, by the way, you do know that Methuselah lived 1,000 years. Can you imagine living a millennium? He was 996 years of age before Methuselah died. That's a long time. And he had other sons and daughters, so all the days of Enoch, verse 23, were 365 years. That's a long time. Where were you In 1717, that was before the Revolutionary War. Harvard had just been founded back in the late 1600s. And it says Enoch walked with God for 365 years, pleasing God. How many of you will say today, for 24 hours, I will do everything walking in my life that will please God? Hard to do, isn't it? Something in Enoch's constitution enabled him for 300 plus years to conduct himself in a life that pleased God. Do you think it was what he wore on the outside? It was his actions that pleased God. Now look what it says. And Enoch walked with God, and because this was such an exception, God did something that rarely happens. It said Enoch walked with God for 300 years, and God what? He didn't experience, he was instantly translated to glory. There's only one other person that we know in the Old Testament that had this happen. Do you know who it's? Bible study on Wednesday night. It's coming up. Who's this going to be? Elijah. 300 years of walking in conduct. So we have to know then, tell me what conduct pleases God? That's the question then. If there is a conduct that pleases God, what conduct, how should we walk? We're all know now that walk means not that you're pigeon-toed and not walking, right? It means how you live, how you conduct yourself, how we treat one another in church. Because it's a living organism. That's why you don't want to get upset or angry or vicious toward other people in God's church, because we'll damage the church. We have to watch our walk. Now let's go back. That you no longer walk as the Gentiles walk. Well, what did the Gentiles do? Well, I got to be honest with you. Roman society was pretty bad. Almost anything in Roman society went. If you didn't want the child, if a child was born and the father didn't like the child, they would give it to the servant. The servant would walk the child out to a field and they'd let the animals have it. So if you had a child born with Down syndrome, you had a child born that for some reason you didn't want, you could take your child out. No one would charge you for murder. In the old covenant of Moses, be glad you're not under the old covenant. If a parent did not like the actions of the child, they could what? Stone that child, and no one could object. You all know that we've been going through the Bible on Wednesday night, and how has the conduct of people been on Wednesday night as we've been journeying through our Bible study? Pretty bad. Lying, cheating, stealing, killing. What else have we seen? Come on, Bible study, help me. Idolatry. What have we seen on Wednesday night? And that was among God's people. And God is saying, by the way, I'll just be honest. After everything I've seen in recent years in our society, in America, in Western culture, I think they're worse than the Romans. How many would you say that we are better than the Romans? Honestly, you can say, do you think we're better than the Romans were? I've read, and I make the guys read, a man called Suetonius, which was a Roman historian, and it goes through all of the emperors and what they've done back in those days of the first century when Rome was so powerful, and nothing that the emperor's done matches what we've seen today that goes on. How many of you have seen and heard during the election about how the politicians are attending these occult services? Huh? Did you see the WikiLeaks that got leaked? And how they go to these things? They have all sorts of places where they trap our politicians. I've been reading about it, where they trap our politicians in sexual peccadilloes, and unbeknownst to the politician, they film them. And then when they want a vote to go a certain way, you ever wondered why our Congress, the vote never quite goes the way you think when you vote for what you thought, it doesn't go? Because all they say, most of those politicians have a surreptitiously taken film of them in compromised positions. And I tell you, our conduct today in Western culture is worse than the Romans. And I don't have to get into a grocery list of what we see. I mean, my aching back. If you watch Fox, the channel 11, I don't know what you get, channel 11, right here. You have on 1 hour, it's The Exorcist. The next hour is Lucifer, who is presented quite favorably. This is what we've got. All coming from Hollywood. And you now are hearing what Hollywood is like. Who sets the agenda for most of the cultural things we do through the media and its hypnotic effect. It's worse today than then. Paul says here that Christians shouldn't be walking in their conduct like the Gentiles. What we see today, that they are darkened in their understanding and excluded from the life of God. If you've been included in the life of God, God cares about your walk. Now that means this. Does God care what color you wore this morning? If you wore a Hawaiian shirt or a dress shirt, a dress or a pantsuit, a leather jacket or whatever? No. He doesn't want his people who name him in their conduct contradicting their testimony. And how are we doing as a Christian culture in terms of maintaining the testimony for Jesus Christ? I think it's horrible. Paul says that you should no longer walk in the futility of the mind, darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. Everyone who does not know God has this spiritual disease. Are you ready? Sclerotic arterial disease, figuratively. Their spiritual heart is stone hard toward the things of God. How do you like that? We get our words for sclerotic plaque. What happens when you don't eat right, or genetics, over time, your arteries start to clog up? How does that happen? Well, I do a lot of reading about that. As you eat too much things that aren't good for you, it literally damages your arteries. And your body tries to, the damage is it roughs up your arteries. If you have glucose, too much sugar in your blood, it roughs up your arteries. It kind of eats at it. And your body begins to try to paint over, plaster over the roughed up parts. And if you keep eating badly, more and more plaster is put up on the parts of your arteries, and that plaque then makes it hard, like plaster. And your arteries have to expand when your blood pressure goes up. If your arteries don't expand, they break. That's why people have strokes. I find it interesting that the food you eat is the stuff that will not only keep you alive, but will what? Kill you. Paul's saying that people who don't know Jesus have for their whole life conducted themselves eating bad spiritual food or actions they do, that their heart is completely plaqued, clogged up, hardened toward the things of God. And what Paul is saying here is, there's two analogies here. You got to walk right in the sense of eat what's right for a Christian. Eat right, walk right. But he's talking nothing about food in the physical sense of going in or what you wear on the outside. He's talking about what you do spiritually. Your mind can either harden your arteries spiritually or keep you healthy spiritually. And we're to watch our diet and we're to watch what we wear, but it has nothing to do with what's on the outside or what we take in. It's what the spiritual food and our spiritual conduct that he's talking about. And he's saying we shouldn't be like the Gentiles, but you know what he's leaving open the possibility of? That there are many people who name the name of Jesus that are no different than the world. If he's saying you shouldn't do this, it meant that somebody at Ephesus probably was. Look what it says in verse 19. They gave themselves over to callousness. Well, you do over and over again something, and guess what builds up? Callousness. They've given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. That means they become habituated. You know what habituation means? The more you do something, the more... there's a thing in our brain that says the more you do something... At first you get a response in your brain that has a feedback loop. The more you do it, the more you don't get the response anymore. That's why so many people, these... Well, I don't want to get into this, it's sort of weird, but these people that do really strange things, it's because their brain becomes so used to the wicked they do that they have to do more and more to get less and less. And he's telling Christians that's not the kind of diet or the way we should walk in church. Look what he says in verse 20. But you did not learn Christ in this way. So, it always has surprised me how much the outside corporate church has emphasized what we wear on the outside and what we eat, rather than understanding, and Carolyn Fisher will understand this, on the outside, anything in moderation is okay. Isn't that right, Carolyn Fisher? She'll remember that joke I played on her a long time ago. It's not the food. It's not the external food. Paul says everything is to be received with thankfulness, and it's sanctified with prayer. But what God cares about is, what are you eating spiritually? And how are you dressing internally when you come to church? But the church today cares more about make sure you're My mom used to say to me, she comes from the fundamentalist side, if you dress up for the world, you should dress up for the Lord. But what God has never talked about is the outside. If you want to dress up for Jesus next Sunday, come spiritually loving, gentle, kind, merciful, because that's what God wants you to dress up at. And who gives a rip if George wears tattoos like last week or someone else? That's not what God cares about. So when you're laying your clothes out next week for Sunday or Saturday night, what am I going to wear to church? Huh? 1 o'clock. Oh, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. You are going to be black and blue. For every minute you think about what you're going to wear externally, think 100-fold more about how to dress up for God in your heart.